The Bengal Business Radio Show examines a wide range of business topics across industries and highlights the impact of ISU College of Business faculty and alumni. Audio of this and each episode of Bengal Business can be found at kisu.org.
Hello, this is Shane Hunt, Dean of the College of Business at Idaho State University. We'll be visiting with ISU College of Business alum Mike Hayhurst, who's a managing partner for the Boise office of KPMG, to talk about how COVID-19 has had an impact on Big Four accounting firms and throughout our economy. We'll also be joined by Dr. Iris Booter, professor of economics here at Idaho State University, to talk about her research into healthcare disparities that have really been pronounced during the current pandemic. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Bengal Business. We're so glad to be here, and we're so thankful to welcome our first guest today, Mike Hayhurst. Mike is a proud Idaho State University College of Business alumni. He's also the office managing partner and audit partner for KPMG, one of the Big Four accounting firms, and Mike is located in Boise. Mike, welcome to the program.
Great. Thanks, Shane. Happy to be here.
Well, Mike, it's so great to have you here, and we've got such a great accounting program here at ISU. Just start by telling us a little bit about your background and kind of your journey from ISU to being an office managing partner for a Big Four accounting firm.
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe just go back a few years before I started at ISU. I grew up in southeastern Idaho there, born and bred in American Falls. So packed up the car and traveled all of 24 miles to go to college from home and had a great time at Idaho State University for my time that was there. I graduated in 1990, and after graduating from Idaho State University with my accounting degree, I moved up to Boise and really started my career with Arthur Anderson in their office in Boise, and have spent most of my career in Boise. I was there from 1990 all the way up to 2007 through various levels, through partnership. And then the firm asked me if I'd be willing to take a rotation to move up to our Anchorage office. There was an opening there for an office managing partner position, gave me a chance to get into leadership, grow my career a little bit. Not any place I'd expected. I knew at some point I'd probably move from Boise, but I had no idea that that would potentially entail going up to Anchorage, Alaska. But as it turned out, it was a great move. It was good for my career. Ultimately, great people up there, great clients that I got to know, and I still work with some of them, but ultimately wanted to get back home and kept talking with my firm's leadership about the potential at some point in time to rotate back down to the lower 48. And there was an opening for the office managing position in Boise, and I moved back down here in 2015 and have since been running the office down here in Boise.
Oh, Mike, that's amazing. And what a great journey on that. I, like you, went to college about 10 minutes from where my parents lived. And somebody asked me one time, they said, what kind of college search process did you go with? I said, well, my college search process was there was a school 10 miles from my parents' house and I applied only there. So it was not a thorough process like some people may have. But it's such an amazing thing. And for you to come from our accounting program and the great things you're doing for one of the largest accounting firms in the world. Mike, one thing we've talked a lot about with some of our alumni guests over previous episodes is just the impact that COVID-19 has had on a variety of industries. Managing an office and being a partner in a Big Four firm, what kinds of impacts have you seen from COVID on either your clients or just how you guys are having to manage the basic processes of your workflow?
Yeah, you know, one of the biggest impacts, obviously, is almost immediately, it seems like overnight, sometime third week of March, you flipped a switch and we went from physically being together in our office with our engagement teams and with our clients to immediately the next day being virtual 100% of the time, right? So, and our clients did the same thing. Like, we didn't have any clients that didn't move to a virtual process as well. Some of them are in different stages of working their way back to being some level of physical, but you know, with the ongoing spikes that we have in the cases, I haven't yet found a company or one of our clients that's yet aggressively moving back, and we definitely aren't with KPMG either moving aggressively back. Matter of fact, we've told all of our people that at least until the beginning of the year, no one's going to be required to come back physically into our offices or with our clients. And depending on what happens with the COVID cases, I wouldn't be surprised if that continues to move, you know, later on into the spring. So I would say a couple of things. First of all, you know, one of the items that has been a really big, one of the big impacts to our industry, our companies over the last 4 or 5 years is really movement to data and analytics, movement into ERP systems, and that's been occurring for 15, 20 years. And it's really been a facilitating infrastructure. I think if you ask people, hey, could you go virtual 100%? Everybody would have said, absolutely no way. I don't think what they appreciated is just how electronic and how virtual we've become in the audit process and working with our clients as far as how we gather information, how we go about auditing it. We already had already set up kind of secure share sites where they were uploading information anyway, and most of that was electronic to begin with, wasn't things they were scanning in. And so from that standpoint, it's actually worked pretty well. What's really hit us by surprise, kind of going through this, is just how much attention, management attention, right? My attention, my managers, our seniors, that it takes to do things virtually. I feel like I'm more connected with my teams now sometimes than when I was physical in the office, because we're constantly on the phone together. Well, I say the phone on Teams meetings or Zoom or,
right,
or, you know, Leaf, whatever it happens to be. It's just we're constantly trying to coordinate because we feel like we're separated, and so we're kind of more consciously getting together, and that's taken a lot of energy and effort out of everybody, but it's been an interesting journey.
No, I think it is. And I think you touched on something. The suddenness of the change, I think, caught all of us. It caught us on the education side. And like you said, one day we were in class and then the next week we were not. We were completely virtual. I also think you said something that I think is so true, and I've heard this from other industries, and I know it's true for us in the College of Business. There are things from this change that we have learned from an education standpoint that we're going to be better if COVID went away tomorrow, right? Things that we can do better and be more efficient, and ways that we can better engage our students regardless of where they are. And so I think there'll be some positives out of that.
Yeah, I agree. I think even in what I tell my staff and our new hires when they're coming in, we were already in a process of trying to be a bit more flexible, right? Our profession's kind of known for working 60-hour weeks during busy season, and you know, you're there morning to night, sunrise to sundown, whatever it happens to be, sometimes during the weekend, and not really flexible. We were already starting to move that because it's important for retention, for our people and for their satisfaction, of having kind of a work your way day where one day a week people could, you know, make their day to work from home or whatever. I think this has accelerated. What it's taught us is we can get our work done. It takes a little bit more effort, a little bit more planning and coordination, but I think even when we're back physical, it's not going to be 100% physical all the time the way we were. I think our teams are going to be much more flexible, and quite honestly, our clients now have revised their expectations of what they expect of us as far as being on site versus being able to do things virtual. So we'll have some combination. I don't know if it's 50-50, 60-40 of people on site, people virtual, people kind of figuring out how it works with their teams and their client and making it work for everybody.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think a lot of things that we've learned will be things that are here in some form. Again, if COVID went away tomorrow, and I think that's fascinating. Mike, one of the things, you know, being an ISU College of Business, being an accounting grad, and the things that you've seen working at KPMG, what advice would you have? Obviously, we have incredible accounting students here at ISU right now, and they are doing a great job in their classes and with their internships. But as someone who hires a lot of new college grads, as you do, hires a lot of ISU college grads, what advice would you give them? Obviously, it's a little bit of a scary time because, you know, what they're seeing is not what they thought when they were high school seniors that college was going to look like. What advice would you have for them?
Yeah, you know, so I'll give a little context, right? And what I'll say, first of all, is you want to meet the technical requirement. And so for me, in public accounting, and even for a lot of our companies, if you're in accounting, you're in business, you're kind of in technical fields to begin with, right?
Right.
So make sure you're getting the work done, that you can show critical thinking skills, like you're doing the things you need to, that you can bring up examples that, hey, I can take complex problems. We're doing it in our classroom project. We're doing it as teams. We're researching complex things. We're pulling together. I can tell you that type of story, right? Similarly, communication is huge. You want to be able to show that you can communicate, written, verbal, and once again, be able to tell a story around that. It can be classroom, it can be from work, it can be other things where, hey, I not only can figure out complex problems and I can think about how to research it, but I can explain it to you succinctly. I can provide it in written to do the documentation, or I can talk you through it at all levels, whether I'm talking at a low level where I'm in a small group, individual, one-on-one, and then be adaptable, right? And be able to say, hey, things are going to change. Overnight, we're going to flip the switch. We're going to be virtual. We'll adapt. Won't be easy, but we'll adapt. And that happens all the time. And I save the last item is really relationship building. And I save that for last. These are my big four, right? When you talk about what do you look for in people, that's what I look for: critical thinking, communication skill, the ability to adapt and to take change. And then relationship building is the last of the big four. And I saved it for last because part of your question dovetailed on this is, what would I tell students now coming out? This is a scary world, right? Scary time that we're in. Not really sure, quite honestly, if all the positions that were going to be there a year ago will be there next year, right? So ultimately, when it comes down to getting hired, it comes down to the process. It's still relationship building. Take the time to take the opportunities that, for instance, in accounting, Beta Alpha Psi, they put together the Meet the Firms night. Beta Alpha Psi and the College of Business, as you know, does the accounting symposium. Take the time to go to those things, to meet the firm, to build the relationships. Because when you get to that first interview, quite honestly, if that's not your first interview, if that's essentially your third meeting, it's a way different experience than if it's a first interview, and really sets you apart. Someone knows something about you to be able to delve into that background on why critical thinking, why communication, why are you adaptable? But ultimately you have a relationship, because that's what this is all about still today, is having relationships, even though we're doing it virtually.
And I don't think that changes, Mike. I think with all the other things that change in the world and our business climate and the different things, challenges we face, I think that core focus on relationships is more important now than it's ever been.
Yep, absolutely. And you are right. We're thinking that, right? As partners at KPMG managers, we're talking all the time about, hey, we're virtual now. How do we keep the relationship? Because you need it. And it's not so much just to continue to sell the business. Quite honestly, where we really use the relationships is when you have difficult issues, it's the relationships that get you through it. You may not see eye to eye, but that helps you respect one another to get through those difficult times that you need to. So we don't want to lose that.
No, we don't. And Mike, I can't tell you thank you enough. I'll share some real-time news. Literally today, before we got on this show, I received a great email from the national headquarters of Beta Alpha Psi, recognizing Idaho State University as a superior chapter in 2020. And just the amazing things that our accounting faculty are doing and our alums like you to support that. But that is the highest level that they give, and a real testament to our accounting program. And then, Mike, the last thing that I would like to say is just thank you. The people that are listening here, one thing that you may not know, Mike has been a dedicated and loyal supporter of our accounting program. And there are so many opportunities that our accounting students have, Mike, every day because of your support that you make possible. And truly, it's changing lives. You know, it's amazing. I talked to two students who were interviewing with Big Four firms, and I had a student tell me a couple weeks ago, Mike, they're like, Dr. Hunt, this is my dream job. And a lot of those accounting opportunities were made possible because of your support and what you do. And we thank you so very much for everything you're doing for our students.
Well, I'm honored to be able to help, to be honest. I've had an amazing career that was put in place because of Idaho State, because of the College of Business and the accounting program, and the professors who I absolutely love going through college and helped me. So I view it as paying it forward, and happy to do so, honored to do so.
Well, Mike, we're honored to have you, and as an alum, we're honored and thankful to have your support. We wish you the best. Everybody at KPMG, stay safe. Have a great holiday season. And for everybody listening, we'll be back shortly with our next guest, Dr. Iris Booter, economics professor here at Idaho State University.
Check out this and every episode of Bengal Business at KISU.org.
This is KISU-FM, Pocatello, Idaho Falls, Rexburg. also available on your Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command play KISU.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to this edition of Bengal Business. I'm thrilled to be joined by my colleague and friend, Dr. Iris Booter. Dr. Booter is an associate professor of economics here at Idaho State University. Dr. Booter, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, Iris, you are truly one of the outstanding economics professors that any student could have. I say that as a father of a son who's taking economics right now. I would love for him to get to take classes with Dr. Booter. Iris, tell us a little bit about your background and kind of how you arrived at Idaho State University.
All right. Sounds great. So originally, I am from a small town in Germany, which a lot of students do not pick up on because I tried to get rid of my accent as much as possible. But from a young age, we really moved around every 4 years. So my brother and I were actually born in Brazil. And of course, packing up, moving every 4 years had its struggles, but it also provided us with this amazing opportunity to learn about different cultures and countries and so forth. So in 1997, a long time ago, we moved to Alabama and we thought it'd just be another 4 year move. However, we grew to really like it. We felt comfortable there. So when it was time to go to college, I could have returned back to Germany. Decided, you know what, I'm going to stay here. I ended up going to Auburn. And after Auburn, I went to the University of Utah to pursue my PhD and just fell in love with the West. And so as soon as I saw ISU had an opening, I immediately applied. And I have not regretted that since whatsoever. Well, it's been amazing.
Iris, as someone, I joke when people on the radio hear my accent, they can tell that I'm not from Idaho originally. As someone who was born in the Midwest, and loved it there. I definitely love the West as well. And we have, as a family, fallen in love with the West. So we feel so thankful and blessed to be here as well. One thing I ask the professors on here is I always think it's fascinating. So I'm a marketing professor, and I love to tell the story about how I got into marketing and how I chose that. And so let me ask this question. How did you choose economics?
So this is also one of my favorite stories to tell my students. It's really how I got into economics, because I will fully admit that when I entered college, I basically had no idea what economics entailed, like none whatsoever. And I don't think this is a truly unique situation to a lot of students who end up choosing an economics majors. In fact, I was originally a pre-med major with a emphasis in chemistry, and that lasted about one whole semester. Like, you know, after the revelation that clearly I was not going to, step in my father's footsteps. He's a chemist. Right. I was not going to be a medical doctor. I decided, you know what? My sisters are studying business. So let's study business. So on a whim, I pretty much pursued a German international trade degree, which again, just, you know, I needed something to kind of fill the void of not knowing what to study. But while I was pursuing this degree, which I thoroughly enjoyed, the business degree, I naturally had to take a few economics courses, and basically the core courses. And then as soon as I took my first principles of macro class, I was practically, I would say, mesmerized by the subject. I really was. And so I took as many as econ electives as I possibly could for that original degree, but I never actually switched my major. And so I ended up graduating early with my BA in German International Trade. And but that was the summer of 2007. Given the economic climate, given the jobs availability in 2007, it was a little rough for an undergrad.
Definitely.
So I called my dad up, so supportive of us and going to university. And I asked him, can I finish out my senior year and finish up my econ degree, because I really love it. And I just never thought of myself as becoming an economist. And he's, of course, allowed me to do so. And that set the path forward. I became an econ major, went on to pursue a master's degree at Auburn in economics, and then went on straight into the PhD program.
Oh, that's amazing, Iris, and so fascinating. You are doing some really incredible research in recent years dealing with minority health and health disparities, which is more important now than I think that it's ever been. So can you talk a little bit about your research and some of the interesting things that you've been examining?
Absolutely. So, and this also ties in what drew me into economics in the first place, because I saw the vastness of the discipline that it offered, because within the economics field, we study aspects regarding classic micro and macro concepts, but also we apply it to fields like healthcare, the labor market, the environment, and the list goes on and on. And so with that in mind, growing up, I really wanted to enter the medical field in some sort of shape or form. And my childhood was spent in India, where I saw the profound impact that health disparities had on people's lives. Like, I just remember that as a child and questioning, you know, why do we have this situation? Why are the disparities present? And what could we do to minimize these? And so when I took my first health econ course, I was absolutely hooked, right? Because health econ, we study things like, you know, we apply economic theories and our models, of course, to our decision-making process. But we can also look at, you know, what individuals decide to do in terms of their health outcomes, what the impact are. We also look at it from the industry perspective, the industry structure, like the physician market, the pharmaceutical market. Of course, we also look at aspects such as health outcomes and morbidity and mortality rates. I mean, the research associated with health economics is just huge. So in my personal focus area, I would say that health disparities are my number one focal point in my research, because I truly believe that we need to highlight these aspects so that we can shape future policy. And so I focus on minority health disparities, as well as regarding chronic diseases, behavior, and lifestyle choices affected, or how that affects us as individuals. And in particular, not to go into, you know, too many details, I guess, about all the, you know, my particular details, but I've looked into aspects regarding disparities in health regarding health-related quality of life studies by gender, race, and ethnicity, as well as looking at the impact of lifestyle behaviors like physical activity, as well as focus on aspects regarding differences in medical spending based on the physical activity level by gender and minority status. And again, as you pointed out, I believe researching minority health and the growing health disparities is even more important now with the ongoing COVID-19 crisis. And we know from past health crisis that research indicates that minority group members tend to be worse off, as they tend to be isolated from the needed resources and access to preventive care as well. So again, I think my current research really falls in line with what we're seeing, and focusing on aspects such as socioeconomic disparities, health disparities, and again, how do we apply that to the ongoing health epidemic?
No, I think it's such great research, Iris, and we're so thankful for you and the impact that you have in the college, but also the impact that your research is having on policy, on our communities, on our region. I think that's really exciting. Another thing that's really exciting is I recently got to be part of a panel that you hosted looking at some of the economic impacts of COVID-19. You had some great scholars from leading universities across the country. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we organized a panel discussion about the economic and health impacts of COVID-19, and we asked a broad range of questions because we cannot just look at it from one lens, right? You know, I wrote an article on the basis of, well, not an article, I guess I don't know what you call it, a newspaper.
Yes, a column, a great newspaper column. Yes.
The word is escaping me about the trade-offs associated with, you know, shutting down the economy versus tackling COVID-19, but it's just not a simple trade-off. And so in this panel discussion, we brought in macroeconomists as well as microeconomists, as well as people in the healthcare field, to really discuss like the historical context of health crisis. Like, what can we learn from historical context? How's the health policy that we have had in the past affected what is currently going on? Right now, we have a system in the United States, it's a very fragmented healthcare system, and that's going to have a profound impact on the ongoing COVID-19 crisis. And so, and then we had other researchers talk about more of the indirect costs associated with COVID-19 that we really don't bring up in the literature. Right. When it comes to direct costs of COVID-19, they're pretty easily attainable. And we can see going to the hospital,
right?
You spend X amount of dollars on treatment and stay in the hospital, But when it comes to indirect costs, we see that there's growing mental illness. We see associated with COVID-19, the stress of COVID-19. We also see the impact that it has on the household and domestic violence. Right? Those are all these associated indirect costs that we just pretty much do not even have a measure on or a scope of how large these costs are going to be.
No, I think that's great, Iris. And it was such a fascinating panel. One of the awesome things was, you know, all of our students were invited to that and they got to participate in that. And I know our students learned a lot. I know I learned a lot, Iris. And so it was a great session. You know, the last question I would say is about teaching. And one of the things that we are proudest of in the Idaho State University College of Business is our top focus is always about helping our students learn and be successful and build careers and lives. And I consistently hear feedback as dean of how much Iris students enjoy and appreciate and learn from your classes. And I think that a lot of times people that may be listening to this maybe had a different experience in economics or healthcare at whatever university they may have attended. Mm-hmm. Kind of what is your approach to teaching economics and certainly healthcare, which in a lot of cases are more challenging things to teach?
Yeah, so it's a challenge because health economics tends to be very political in nature. And so you really don't want to divide the class based on political views.
Absolutely.
But you can't teach economics or health economics without discussing politics either. So I feel like you have to really balance that, those aspects. And at first I used to shy away from telling my opinion or anything like that. But the more I shied away from it, the students wanted to know, well, how do you feel versus, you know, how do I feel? So I've become very open about my viewpoints, philosophy, and why I think this way. And so one of the first and this is particular now with health econ. One of the starting points that I discuss in the class is, do you believe healthcare is a right or privilege? Because I think this is the foundation of one of the biggest political divides that we have regarding healthcare in the United States. And I just tell them, well, from my personal background, I come from Germany. This isn't a question in Germany. So to me, when I came to the United States, I could not fathom, this is my personal opinion, that this was even a question. So as long as I've brought in, like, this is where I grew up and this is what's been instilled on me, this is makes the discussion much more easily attainable, I think, in terms of that. So we start out with that discussion. I, of course, let students know you can have your own opinion, but we just need to discuss the pros and cons of each belief system in that sense. And then what I really think is important when we talk about the approach to healthcare economics and health policies in general is, of course, we have to look at the industry structures and look at the economic implications, and that's important, and all the health policies. But one of my favorite things to do is to really compare and contrast to other countries so that we can see the pros and cons of all the other countries and how they're set up. Of course, we can't cover every country, but we're really going in depth about what other countries do in terms of how they finance healthcare, how they pay and finance healthcare, how much they spend, who gets access to healthcare, et cetera. So a newly published book came out by Ezekiel Emanuel titled "Which Country Has the Best Healthcare?" And that has been one of my favorite books to introduce into a healthcare class, because in the first page of the introduction, he asks a simple question: which country has the world's best healthcare? And we can list all the pros associated with the U.S. healthcare system, all the negative effects or the negatives of the U.S. healthcare system. But the same goes for other countries, because no country is perfect in their healthcare system. But we can learn what works in other countries, what we could question, would it work in the United States? And then we can also question, well, can Germany learn something from the U.S.? And what could the U.S. learn from Germany? And it brings in a lot of discussion. And a lot of students have said that they have learned so much from reading this book because they never knew how other countries operated. And I really love utilizing that tool in my healthcare class about comparing and contrasting different economic systems or healthcare systems, I should say.
No, Iris, I love everything about that. And I love the fact that it's a place where people can debate ideas in a thoughtful and intelligent way. And we need a lot more of that as a country and for our future, to where we take these tough challenges and whether or not we all disagree on any one particular issue, but we have thoughtful discussions and we examine and we look at it and we try to determine what is our best thing for going forward. And I think that's a great Absolutely. Experience for our students to have those discussions. Well, Dr. Booter, we thank you so much for joining us on this edition of Bingle Business. And for everyone that's listening, thank you for joining us this time. And we invite you back for our next episode of Bingle Business.
The Bingle Business Radio Show examines a wide range of business topics across industries and highlights the impacts of our ISU College of Business faculty and alumni. Each episode features ISU College of Business alumni who is a senior executive at a leading organization, sharing their experiences, thoughts on current business, related events, and advice for business professionals and entrepreneurs. In addition, each episode features interviews with an ISU College of Business professor where they discuss their research, the impact it is having to solve current business problems, and innovative things they are working on in the classroom. The show is hosted by Dr. Shane Hunt, Dean of the ISU College of Business. Join us on the final Thursday of every month at 7:30 p.m. here on KISU FM for Bingle Business.